Some killers attack complete strangers. Some target the vulnerable, the young, or the elderly. And some prey on people that they know. There are killers who are inspired by money or by revenge, by sexual deviancy, by hatred. There are opportunists and there are meticulous planners. But what unites these men and women is one simple trait, and it's the most terrifying thing of all. They live amongst us. In our towns, on our streets, in our houses. They're just like the rest of us, but capable of evil. And they could be anywhere. Welcome to Murder Town.
Do you feel it in the air? Oh. Something wicked this way comes. Something wicked this way comes. Something wicked this way comes. Something wicked this way comes.
Every corner of the UK has its tales of bloodshed. But tonight, we're in a town where murder was so rare that for two decades, there weren't any.
We're in Tamworth, in the Midlands, a place that residents felt safe in.
That was until one of the most horrific and devastating crimes that left the whole town afraid to go outside.
A girl had been found naked. It was a murder.
Everybody in the town was really shocked. You know, it's a 17-year-old girl.
It was an event that had started to terrify people who were living there.
There was a sex maniac attacker out there who would kill, attack and murder random victims.
Initially, I think that what I was told was that a girl had been found naked, and the report was that she appeared to have been raped. Before I think I'd even left the station, I had a second call to say that it wasn't a rape, it was a murder.
A woman's body had been discovered in a park not far from Tamworth town centre.
So, yes, it's imperative to get there as quickly as possible, and also to make sure that you, together with the investigative team and crime examination team, are putting things in place. She was actually found by a friend of the family, so we had got more than a good idea of the identity.
The victim was a local girl called Heather Tell. She was just 17 and had been reported missing the previous evening.
She really was a good girl, and it's, yeah, just shocking that it was her. She was a little bit younger than me. But when I think back to that time and all the faces that I remember, she's very much part of that. She just had a glow about her, very tall and slim, very blonde, always really happy, and was one of the girls, when she danced, she just really used her face, she just smiled a lot. She really did shine, you know.
So many children almost regarded, I think, as a rite of passage that they'd become involved in the local dance club, girls in particular anyway. Because she had therefore taken this up as her life, she was in many ways almost a representation of a typical Tamworth teenager.
Indeed, it was this love of dance that had seen Heather set off from her home on the night that she vanished.
Heather was supposed to meet her friend at the dance studio, I think at approximately 8:30-ish that the previous evening, the Friday evening. When she didn't turn up, her friend contacted Heather's home, spoke to her father, and said basically, well, where's Heather? The family and friends started looking for Heather, tried to retrace her steps, couldn't find her, and then it was about 10 o'clock time that they contacted the police and reported Heather as a missing person. There was a lot of searching done that evening. Police dogs were used, the helicopter was used. The following morning, the searching resumed, not just from the police, but her family and friends. And the lad who found Heather was a close friend of the Tell family. He was cycling on his bike and he saw something in amongst the bushes. He went to have a look and he realised it was a body.
Police knew she'd left her home and walked towards the dance studio.
It was here. Heather walked over this bridge. And this path, as you can see, connects with the main path, but it cuts the corner off, and she walked down here.
It is quite secluded. I would have been nervous walking through there. You would feel quite alone, you would feel quite vulnerable.
Heather would have walked down these steps. It was broad daylight. Tragically, it was along here that Heather encountered her attacker, and that's unfortunately where she was attacked.
In there.
It was over there.
The fact that it appeared that she had been killed doing something that was so normal was something that struck you as being quite frightening in many ways. And I think that was what came to affect the community in the way that it did. It was an event that had started to terrify people who were living there.
Now a killer was on the loose, and the whole town was in fear. Every part of the UK has witnessed murder, but for those who live in these towns, they can often seem a safe place to be.
I grew up in Tamworth. It's a pretty big town. It's just north of Birmingham. My parents moved there just before they had me. They've lived in the same house their whole lives, which is pretty typical of Tamworth. You know, people grow up there, they buy a house nearby and they stay there.
The housing quality meant that people had room to move around. It was a place that many people in that part of the world aspired to live in. there were a disproportionately large number of young people who were all around the same age. And that meant that if you were young and wanted sort of entertainment activities, then there was lots for you to do there.
A lot of us did just sort of hang out at the park, and parents felt quite happy for us to get the bus into town on our own and look around the shop, things like that. The dance school where I went was just down the road, quite happy walking there and back. It's a decent place to live. Everybody knows everybody. So, yeah, it was a place that people felt safe, I think, yeah, on the whole.
In terms of high crime areas, yes, it has its moments, but yeah, generally, I think there's a feeling of safety and security.
I was chief reporter and news editor of the local paper, the Tamworth Herald. I knew that there hadn't been a murder in Tamworth at all since the early 70s, so it was a place that I think had come to feel that it just wasn't the kind of thing that happened in that sort of town.
In the year 2000, police in Tamworth were on the hunt for a killer. The body of 17-year-old Heather Tell had been found in a local beauty spot. She'd been on her way to the local dance studio, a short walk from home where she was killed. But police at the scene were at a loss as to who might have done it.
By the time I got here, it was absolutely torrential rain. Which was a cause for concern in getting here, making sure that the scene was protected. We were very concerned the body was getting wet. So when you carry out the examination and you're trying to cover what we would call contact and trace evidence, which can be anything from fibres to DNA, saliva body fluids, or indeed, depending on the circumstances, fingerprints or other contact trace evidence, you obviously don't want that disturbed or contaminated before you get the chance for it to be properly examined. Fortunately, in terms of evidence recovery, as you can see, there's a fair bit of foliage, and the body was protected a bit by the natural elements, which was important because it does take a short while for you to get the resources here and the tent and get that set up. And there is a team, a major investigation team, and a scenes, very importantly, a crime scene examiners team, scene to crime team, that are with you as well. We had an underwater team that searched the stream, looking for anything that might be connected. And we also searched the whole of this area painstakingly and methodically.
There was a huge amount of shock, not just from people who knew her and her family and friends, but everybody in the town was really shocked. You know, it's a 17-year-old girl.
Teenagers were afraid to go outside their homes. Families were locking their doors when they were inside. Kind of things that people hadn't had to think of before because they'd felt safe sort of walking from one part of Tamworth to another.
I think definitely people were more mindful of where they were going on their own and letting people know where they were, and yeah, there was definitely that sort of ripple effect of fear and worry that somebody was still out there.
this is potentially quite an unusual murder from a criminal point of view. The majority of murders are actually domestic, and so invariably they are able to find out who is responsible fairly quickly.
80% of murder victims are killed by someone they know. So police began finding out about Heather's associates.
Could it have been somebody who had a fallout with Heather, had some malevolent feelings towards her? There was no information coming out in relation to that at all. So the more that we investigated, the more we inquired into the circumstances of this, the more it appeared that this was somebody who didn't have a relationship, hadn't had any prior contact with Heather.
I mean, tragically, in these cases, so many times it is someone who is very well known to the victim, where even if it's not necessarily a family member, then it could be someone who is an ex-boyfriend or a friend or someone like that. And we asked them very early on whether they knew whether it was likely to be those, and they appeared to be fairly clear early on that they had discounted that possibility.
If it wasn't someone Heather knew, then the attacker was a stranger. And some wondered if he'd attacked before.
There had been a number of reports of indecent exposure in Tamworth. It was a line of inquiry for them. They said, in fact, there had been 50 in the previous 14 months, and that they were looking at all of those and seeing whether there was a potential pattern or whether there were instances where people had been picked up for it. And that was what gave us the impression that they were maybe working through the suspects that they had. We all knew as reporters that it is often the case that when people might start out being involved in indecent exposure, but there are occasions when they go on to commit more serious crimes, perhaps rape, or even worse in the case of sexually related murders.
So, were police looking for a serial flasher who had escalated his crimes to murder? And if so, was he likely to strike again?
Possibility of the offender striking again is a massive concern, and that's why it's so important to pursue all lines with vigour and get to the answer as quickly as you possibly can.
The scene told police that Heather had been strangled and that the killer had taken some time.
You can't rule anything out until you've got the full information, but certainly the area around the park was quite open, but as you approached the actual scene where the body was found, that was in more secluded undergrowth and not easily viewed from the main path which runs down through the park. It did suggest that somebody knew the area and knew the locality. Heather's clothing had been taken off her. That suggested a sexual motive to the motivation to the attack. So yes, I'm thinking of a male, a previous offending history of violence and or of sexual offending, and quite probably both.
To help focus the investigation, Peter had a profile drawn up of who the suspect might be.
The offender profile's based on the likelihood of people falling within certain categories and characteristics. It does help you prioritise your lines of inquiry. The locality that they suspected that he would have lived within 5 or 6 miles of the area, that he would have a previous offending history of a sexual nature. You're then looking at the movements of people in and around the park, the movements of local people, people who may have been here, who may have information which would assist the inquiry, and it's being able to encourage those people to come forward and pursue as many different lines of
investigation and information that you possibly can.
So police were looking for a local stranger, and the crime scene was still giving up clues.
Well, we've pretty much found everything that Heather had, including her earrings, which had been torn off her. But also very relevant, we found her mobile phone, and that was on this side of the path. And examination of the phone revealed that a call was in the process of being made. Heather perhaps had been startled or scared by seeing quite possibly her attacker, that she had perhaps got her phone in her hand, had tried to make a call, and the phone had been snatched off her and thrown away. It hadn't connected, but she had started to dial home.
Heather had apparently been seconds away from reaching help, but her killer had escaped, and the community was scared of what he'd do next.
There was a sex maniac attacker out there who would kill, attack and murder random victims. That focuses the mind. It focuses, the community and the public, and they want that reassurance. Of course they do, that this person's going to be caught and be caught quickly.
I have no reason to want to cause unnecessary alarm, but as a police officer, I would be negligent if I didn't urge extreme caution to people living in the area. There is a killer out there, and until that person is caught, I urge everyone, particularly young women, to take extreme care. No one lives in total isolation. There must be someone out there who, for reasons of misguided loyalty, is shielding someone they have suspicions about. I would hate to think that anyone could look at a photograph of this gentle, kind-hearted teenager and knowingly harbour her killer. So that is an appeal directly to people in the community. That is an unusual way of delivering a statement after a murder, I think.
So, with the help of the media, police hoped a breakthrough was just around the corner. But would their appeals root out the killer or fall on deaf ears?
In the year 2000, police in Tamworth were investigating the murder of 17-year-old Heather Tell. But while cops were looking for the evidence to catch her killer, Heather's family was saying their final goodbyes.
It was an unusual funeral in many ways. It took place at St. Editha's Church, which is the main church in Tamworth. It's a big, big church. On the day, the police estimated something in the region of 2,000 people. It was clear that far, far more people would want to attend than were able to be accommodated in this huge church. I think those people came together because they wanted to both say goodbye to someone who they felt was, in many ways, a typical Tamworth teenager, but also to sympathise and empathise with her parents and her family and her friends who were going through something so awful at that time. It really was something that struck deeply into the community.
Meanwhile, the police were leaving no stone unturned in their pursuit of the killer.
And they were desperate for the community to help them.
The indications were that this was somebody with local knowledge. So what you are appealing for is local people to come forward, either who've been in and around the area or saw somebody either before or after the attack, or may have their own suspicions for other reasons about somebody that they know. The case was quite high profile. It was on the front page of nearly all of the nationals. It was featured on national television. That naturally brings a lot of response. We had a number of witnesses come forward who saw somebody suspicious. One in particular was a young man who was riding his bike through the park, and a man stepped out in front of him and nearly collided with the bike. So the witness came face to face with that person and got a very good look at him. He'd got a very good eye for detail. He gave particular detail, even down to describing the buckle of this person's belt, that he remembered small details like that from a fairly fleeting and chance encounter. What was particularly interesting about that sighting was it was in very close to the scene of the attack, and the time parameters were believed to be just after the attack had taken place. So it was one of a number of sightings of a person that we were very interested in.
So now police had a possible description, but cops still weren't sure who that person was. They needed a breakthrough, and it came from the community of Tamworth.
When information is coming in, you don't know its value. You can assess its potential value, but you don't know whether this is going to be a particular breakthrough moment or not. One of the calls that we did have was somebody who was concerned about somebody very close to them who had been out that night and not come back to the next day. And when he did return, he was wet and dishevelled and had clearly been out all night.
A girl came forward, or at least tipped somebody off, that she had concerns about her father. She didn't know where his whereabouts at the time of the murder. And also, he'd served time previously for an attempted rape some years before, so there were already some concerns there.
Well, it must be the almost the worst dilemma that anyone has, to know that potentially a close family member might be involved in the most awful, awful crime.
Facing a crisis of conscience, the woman had chosen to speak up and raise her concerns about her father. And the police were prepared to listen.
Gigi had got a previous offending history. He had a number of offences when he was younger, of a sexual nature, mainly indecent exposure. But he had served a term of imprisonment when he had gone to aid a woman who had broken down in her vehicle, approached her on the pretext of helping her, and then tried to attack her and drag her away. She fought him off. Made off from the scene, but the details of his vehicle were taken. He was traced through that. He was convicted, and he was sentenced to a term of imprisonment.
So Chigi was added to the list of persons of interest, but the media weren't told of the development.
People want to know more information. They want to know what's happening. They want to know whether progress is being made. And to be honest, we had to be kind of patient. All you can do is say, well, I know the police are working on it, but there's nothing more that I can say than that.
Under interview, Chidji denied any involvement, and police had nothing more than a hunch that he might be involved, although he did match an offender profile that the police had compiled.
The offender profiles gave some very vital pieces of information around the locality, the fact the person was local, that he would have a previous offending history of a sexual nature, and all of those things turned out to be correct and applied to Michael Chidji.
But Chidji wasn't the only suspect who fitted the profile, and although police tried their best, none of them could be tied to the crime scene. Now cops hoped that a relatively new science, DNA profiling, could lead them to a single suspect.
What we did with all of the nominals of interest that came into the inquiry, and this included Michael Chidji, we took a swab, a mouth swab from them, for DNA purposes. At that time, we had not got DNA from the crime scene, but in case that was forthcoming.
In 2000, DNA profiling was still being developed. Police were able to match profiles from the scene to those they collected from suspects, but it took much longer than it does now. So suspects remained on the radar until they could be eliminated.
I remember very well getting the phone call. Firstly, to say that there was a potential match, and then that in itself can create tension, anxiousness. You want to know what the answer is. The swabs that were taken from Heather at the scene produced a DNA profile, and that profile matched Michael Chidji. When the information is relayed and saying, yeah, it is a match, and the name gets put forward, then that is that moment where it focuses your mind on what you have to do next. Is it a cause of celebration? Not yet.
Michael Chidji was now the prime suspect. He had previous convictions. His own daughter had revealed he was out all night when the murder had occurred, and his DNA had been found on Heather's body. Police swooped to make an arrest.
He was arrested very quickly after that. One of the main reasons was, if Chidji was the attacker, then he is still out there, he's still at liberty, and he, or whoever the attacker is, could strike again. You don't want to take that chance or allow that potentially to happen. So an operation was put together, and Michael Chidji was arrested.
I think there was a relief as soon as they'd got someone, obviously it wasn't known at that point whether he was guilty or innocent, but clearly there was an immediate weight off everyone's shoulders that he was going to remain in custody.
After weeks of hunting, police had their prime suspect under arrest. But even the police had no idea how Chidji would explain away his connection to the scene. The violent murder of Heather Tell in the year 2000 had left the town of Tamworth fearing for its safety. Police there suspected the killer was a local man.
A man called Michael Chidji.
He'd been unaccounted for on the night of the crime, and his DNA had been found on the underwear of the victim.
And when police charged Michael Chidji with murder, they'd hoped he'd admit his guilt.
But Chidji had an answer to the police case, and it was one that nobody expected.
He did not admit to it. He said he'd been walking all that night, and that he and Heather had never crossed paths. So, no, he denied it. He took seem to take the position that we're the investigators and subsequently the prosecution at court. It's their job to prove it. Well, let them prove it.
But forensic science challenged his claim, with his DNA found on the victim.
It might sound conclusive, but you have to look at possible explanations, and indeed, Chidgey eventually did come up with an explanation as to how his DNA may have got there, which was presented at court by his defence. That explanation was that he liked to fondle female underwear, and he must have fondled the bra that Heather subsequently bought and wore, and it was secondary transference of his DNA onto Heather.
So Chidgey was accepting that his DNA could be found on the victim's underwear, but claiming it had got there when he fondled it in a shop before she'd even bought it.
Now, that might appear to some people to be far-fetched, but nevertheless, as an investigator, you can't be inert or complacent about that. And I know we ended up with the product control expert from a well-known chain of lingerie, of which the bra was a make, giving evidence in the witness box, having examined the bra, and saying from the striations on it, it must have been washed a number of times, that detergent would have killed the possibility of the DNA, and giving expert evidence which significantly reduced the likelihood of that explanation, as it was, of being true.
And that wasn't the only clue presented to the jury.
An important piece of evidence was the witness who nearly ran over somebody on his bike who stepped out in front of him, because that witness, on a subsequent identification parade, positively identified Michael Chidgey as being the man he saw at that time on that night, and subsequently gave evidence at court to that effect. It's always an immense relief if, as and when the jury views the evidence in the same way that you do and confirms that finding of guilt. Not for you personally, but for Heather, for a family, and also for the community as well, that they know that the person who did this dreadful deed has been brought to justice.
With Chidgey guilty, the court could hear about his previous convictions.
It's sickening but not surprising when somebody has had these previous. Not everybody who flashes at someone in the park goes on to do something like this, but everyone who goes on to do something like this will have started with that kind of thing. So it was pretty textbook progression of offences. He was obviously building up to this kind of offence. I think people that can commit this kind of offence are just driven by something that we don't really understand, and it was literally just for his own gratification.
My assessment of Michael Chidgey is that he is an extremely dangerous individual, and he always will be. I fear that if he was ever released, that there is a danger that he could offend again.
For journalist Philip, the role the media played in helping the police with their appeals means it will never be forgotten.
I've reported on wars and disasters for national newspapers. I went on to work in a regional newspaper as well. I wouldn't say murders were common, but they happened considerably more frequently than in Tamworth. And still, to this day, I regard the reporting that the Tamworth Herald did on this murder as being among the most important that I've ever worked on, because how important it was to the community that I was writing for at the time. It was quite an unusual and meaningful thing, I think.
This case was tragic and very challenging, being a stranger attack. I remember it very well for those reasons, and also because of the effect it had both locally and in particular on Heather's family and friends.
I just can't imagine what they must have gone through. She was a big part of their family, obviously, and just a huge loss to them. You know, I look at photos of her now and it's just so sad. She's just like frozen in time, just, you know, 17, whole life ahead of her, and it's just gone. And I'm sure her family still miss her and feel it today. I think the memory of what happened is still there today. You know, all the people that danced with Heather, people that went to school with her, you know, they still remember her on the anniversary and when she died on her birthday. It's still very much, you know, at the forefront of people's minds, what happened. It's not something that people in Tamworth are going to forget easily.
The murder of Heather Tell was one that truly shook the Tamworth community to the core. But it was also the community that pulled together and came up with the answers to find her killer. This is one of those cases which seemed to baffle police, but their determination meant that it was only a matter of time before the suspect was tracked down and the town could relax. But it just goes to show that even in the nicest of places, a murderer can always be lurking.